First, many thanks to the organizers for inviting me here. So today I'm going to talk about new physics signatures with top crushing. And this is this is based on mainly on this set of work. So here's an outline of the talk. So first I'm going to briefly tell you the some of the motivations that to consider this class of signals. And then I'm going to show you two case studies. One of them is the TT bar missing energy as a decay product of some new physics particle. The other one is the highly boosted top quark. So the first motivation is very familiar, so the from the naturalness. So we all know that the largest quadratic divergence in the for the Higgs mass in the standard model is contributed by the top loop, and therefore it's very natural to expect there is some top partner to cancel this quadratic divergence. That such top mass of such top partner should be around the TeV, and with some gauge quantum numbers similar to the top quark. Therefore, the signature of such top quark partner will often involve top quarks. So the second motivation is that the top quark is indeed quite special. Even just for the fact that it's much heavier than all the other fermions in the standard model. So therefore, if there's something unique is responsible for generating its mass, then top quark has a preferred coupling to that something new. So that leads to other kind of new signatures that are involving top quarks. So I'm going to then present to you two case studies. So A is the first one is along the lines of a top partner. So I will be very brief here because as you will see, it's kind of conventional. And so the second one is along the lines of motivating a heavy top mass, in particular motivated by the top compositeness. Okay. So as you will see, all these will present new experimental challenge to identify those signals to make discoveries, because they all feature different kinematics and have different objects, event topology in those events. So, top partner. So, let me in addition to the top partner, I may also just put in a very familiar additional ingredient, just that there's some discrete symmetry that motivated by satisfying precision tests, the existence of dark matter, and so on. And therefore, that guarantees that the end product of all the decay chains are some neutral particle that escape detector. So therefore, the signature in this case I'm going to look at is TT bar plus missing energy. So of course, there are a lot of there are very familiar typical examples of such top partners, such as the stop in supersymmetry, also the T odd partner in little Higgs models, also similarly the KK top in universal extra dimension models. So in this in stop case, it decays the top plus RSP, and T prime indicates the top plus some neutral stable particle. And so the dominant way to produce those top partners is a 2CD pair production. And so there are two curves. One of them is fermionic top production. The other one is scalar. You see that at around for the mass around TeV, they all have a decent rate to be produced. Okay. So of course we all know this is just getting produced is very far away to be identified. So let's think about it. So let's look for these events in the TT bar plus missing energy channel. So there have been some studies in the purely hydronic channel, meaning that both two tops are decayed to hydronically. So I'm going to focus here on the set electronic channel, which one of them is actually decayed set electronically. So the potential standard model background is of course the TT bar itself decays electronically. So I also have the missing energy carried away by neutrino. And there's this so-called irreducible background with TTZ when Z goes to neutrino. There's also just a background that I produce WBDJJ, where W goes to a semi-atomic decay. So I'm going to exploring a variety of kinematical cuts and look at the mass parameters in this simple setup to see where is our reach going to be. Okay, so let's start with the simple things. For example, I can just I can have a look at the two example case. One of them, so I start out with a mass of the top partner being a TeV. So I have two case of the mass of the missing particle. One of them is 200, the other one is 800. So here is the blue is the signal. So you see that the missing ET distribution for the large mass splitting case is spread out, where the sort of smaller one is more squeezed, because that's the amount of phase space you have. And so you see that here are the missing energy distribution for all the backgrounds. And we see that, for example, the irreducible background for TTG, you can probably put a cut on missing energy from around 300 GeV to cut them out. But the real problem is the long tail of the TT bar and the WBDJJ. And you see similar behaviors for other transverse variables such as any factors. And we also see that the most challenging case is actually when the mass gaps become smaller. And this is, of course, very reasonable, because in that case, everything is almost produced at the rest. The full event kinematics is more similar to the TT bar itself. Okay. So now the question is, can we find ways to improve just cutting on these transverse variables? Okay. So of course, there's still a lot of information we haven't used. One of them is just a reconstruction. Because, for example, the TT bar background, we know that we have enough kinematical constraints to actually reconstruct the top mass in the semi-atomic mode. Okay, so we should be able to reconstruct both the hadronic top and the semi-atomic decay top. Okay, so you will see a resonance in those channels. Okay, however, for the signal, if I still make the assumption that this is, I can go through the same reconstruction procedure with the assumption that the missing energy is carrying away by neutrino. Of course, in that case, this assumption is very, very wrong. So it's like many, many times I get even unfavorable results. Okay, so the reconstructed mass is going to be completely spread out. So, but in this case, the failed reconstruction is actually my signal. Okay, so of course, we can also try to reconstruct the so-called the top on the hadronic side. This will give me a handle, for example, against this WBDJJ cycle. Okay. So here, this is a plot, the contour plot of the reconstruction both to the top to the top TT bar plus missing energy signal versus the TT bar background. So you see that for the TT bar background, you have it's very concentrated on the real. So sorry, this is a complex mass, if you want. So remember, I get many unphysical solutions when I do the reconstruction with the signal. Therefore, you can choose to plot them on a complex point. So for the top TT bar, of course, this is the correct assumption. So you get a reconstruct the top mass concentrated on real axis around top mass. The spread is caused by the resolution. And for the signal, you see it spread out. You see that, again, the small mass splitting case is more challenging, because still it looks somewhat more like TT bar. TT bar. TT bar. TT bar and TT. Yeah, plus I thought. So there can also be other additional kinematical features that we can think about For example, you can one thing that's different is the TT bar event is dominantly more back-to-back, and therefore it's not really recoiling against the other massive particles. Therefore, if you define some a notion of the direction, so you can take the lepton, for example, lepton B defines a direction, and the angle between that direction and the direction of the hydraulically reconstructed pulse, you'll find that for the TT bar background, it's more back-to-back, and for a signal, it's more spread out. So you can play with some of those other kinematical features as well. So here is the discovered reach you can obtain. Here are the set of cuts that we use. And so on this side, this is a fermionic top funnel. So we see that for one TeV top funnel with 100 inverse frontal bound, we can get roughly 5 sigma. And also you see the decreasing of the reach when the mass gap between the top partner and then the missing particle become getting closer to the top mass. Okay. So here is a similar reach plot for the stop, and it's more limited because the stop has a much smaller range than the fermionic top partner. Okay. So now I'm going to switch gear, talk about another set of signals, namely the new physics resonance decays to a pair of TT bars. So there are a lot of motivations to consider this kind of signal. So one of them is that if the top is composite, and it will have a large coupling to the other composite resonance. Okay, so a typical setup is in the RS model that I have a right-handed top localized towards my other weight range. Okay, so now, so here is the signal versus the standard model TT bar background. Okay, so in this particular model, we consider KK gluon and the production and the decay to TT bar. You see that the signal is actually pretty big on top of the TT bar background. So it is. However, this of course doesn't mean that this is the only background we should consider, and therefore this kind of signal should be very easy to detect. Oh, before I go into that, let me just mention that there's already a limit in this kind of scenario, a new limit from Pavitron. I think this curve is the one that is coming from the KK predicted KK gluons, and this is their limit. Okay, so it's excluded up to about 900 GeV. Sorry, this is the RSKK gluon. This curve, the predicted RS gluon. So they are exactly doing the. Sorry. Yeah. Huh? Okay. Sorry, say that again. What I've just shown you is all photon level. Okay. So I'm going to go into it detail later. So the reason I mentioned here is also what they did is exactly the analysis that I sort of showed you on the slide. They just did it and they measure the shape of the environment TT bar distribution. Now, of course, there are much more challenges, and a lot of challenges at LHC. First of all, again, standard model TT bar has a very long tail, and these composite resonance can be wide. Therefore, if you are very heavy, so the shape can be the resonance, the shape of the resonance can be distorted. And but most noticeable is so typically we are actually thinking about the mass scale of those resonance we're thinking about actually pretty high. For example, for the simplest RS model, used in our example, if you put in some electric precision constraint, typically we're considering the KK gluon resonance to be pretty heavy, 2 to 3 TeV. And therefore, the decay product, that when you produce them on shell, they decay down to TT bar. Each of them are actually very boosted. The energy available is roughly half of the KK gluon mass. So a lot of time, they really won't look like nice isolated event like this, rather than you take this and boost it, it looks like a cone of energy. So identifying, so here is a little bit, again, qualitative study of the degree of collimation. For example, you can take your isolation criteria to be a cone of delta R equal 0.4, and take a resonance around 3 TeV. So here are the fractions of events that are with different number of objects in it. So for example, the red one is the fraction of the event with only two objects, two cone of object with 0.4 cone of object in it. And you see that that's actually a significant fraction. This is in the mass window of around 3 TeV with a width of around 500 TeV. Okay, so there are a lot of large fraction of events actually two objects like, and you can also ask the question of lifetime isolation. It turns out in this case only a few percent of the semi-leptonic event actually have a lifetime isolation according to this criteria. Now, so of course, if the only way we can say this, these are dijet with high environment mass, then of course the dominant background is going to be this QCD dijet, and even at this high environment mass, still roughly a factor of 10 bigger than your signal, and even you can afford to tag the top, highly boosted top as Bs, and you do two B tags and so on. The signal, so this is the BB bar background. The signal now is a sort of barely visible, but you can still get a lot of help if you can get some other ways to identify these highly boosted tops. So here are already some other studies. You can focus on the fact that, say, I don't really have two objects, but maybe I have three objects, I have four objects, although some of them are collimated. So what are the strategies to do in those cases? So here are some studies. I'm actually going to focus on a slightly different route, meaning that if I just say there I have my top jet, how do I identify it as a top jet? Okay, so suppose they are already very collimated, all in one narrow cone. So, sorry. So the basic intuition that, of course, we can do something different is that the top decay is a T to BW prompt, and then B and the W also decays to hard object. Okay, so there are roughly three hard initial objects. Okay, so for QCD, you actually have a lot of radiation to build up again, a very energy. So again, energetic top was to be a massive jet and with some substructure. So now the question is really, how well can we distinguish them from some QCD jet? We can also, for example, consider, for example, the fact that there's a lepton here. The lepton is still hard, so we can try to design some variables that to take advantage of that. Although that lepton is not necessarily isolated by a conventional measure. Okay, so before I move on to my study, let me also make a comment about, for example, one strategy you can take is to say, oh, I get this flat top jet. Now I'm just going to shrink my cone size. Hope I see more smaller jets. Okay. So it is going to be useful. It is going to be useful. Although by definition, in this case, all the objects are already highly overlapped. So there should be some kind of limit. Moreover, I think more importantly is that such a strategy is actually not so different from the fact that you start out with a basket and looking for substructures. So the kind of the background you worry is identical in both cases. So in one case, you worry about whether QCDJs have a smaller structure. In the other case, you worry about whether QCD is capable of producing smaller and closer jets. So that's it's the same type of question you have to address. Okay. So the first type of variable one can think about is actually top jet has mass. So that mass of around 170 GeV. And however, that variable is still is certainly useful. Okay. So on the other hand, jet mass. Let's say average jet mass of QCD is actually also increasing as a function of the PT, of the hardness of the jet. So basically, it's the harder it is, you tend to radiate more, you build up more jet mass that way. So here is a plot with a different PT cut on the QCD jet. You see that in the end, when I increase the hardness of the QCD jet, the mass of the jet starts to be more spread out. So here is a plot. If I wanted to say this is the only variable I have, now what is the efficiency versus rejection as a function of my cuts on this variable? Okay, so these are the curves from three representative resonance decays. So my signal model is that I produce some resonance and decay to highly boost tau. So also for later reference, we can choose three points with the same rejection as our benchmark. You see how they change when we include more variables. Okay. So also for the rest of the talk, I'm only going to focus on shape information. Therefore, I'm only going to show you kinematical distributions that's normalized to one. So now let's think about what's different, a little bit more about what's different for QCD jet. So the leading order feature for QCD jet is modeled by parton showers. So we consider 1-to-2 splitting from mother particles splitting into two A and B. So a shower history, for example, at this splitting point is after integrate over the azimuth angle is characterized by two variables. One of them is the mass of the mother particle, or virtuality of the mother particle, if you want, and also some other variable, which typically you can choose it to be, for example, the energy fraction of the branching. You can take the minimal energy of these two and divide by the energy of the mother particle. Okay. So the statement from QCD is that there's a very definite prediction for the phase space for the distribution of this splitting that's controlled by the so-called controlled by this formula. So here is the 1/T is the collinear singularity in QCD, and this is an arteriopolitic splitting kernel which has an important infrared singularity when z goes to zero, and then this is the well-known pseudocode profile. So the leading order feature at this order we should see is that if I can manage to look at QCD, measure its energy at each splitting, I should see that the z variable I form this way should have an infrared singularity towards zero. Okay, but for top jet, at least for the first set of splittings, that's very different because we know that there's some hard process going on. Therefore, the z from those first branchings should be really keep towards some finite value. Okay. So let me also make a comment on the choice of z. So, of course, the t variable here is the virtuality of the mother particle. So roughly speaking, this is the virtuality of a jet is captured by the jet mass variable already. So we wanted to find some variable that is maximally orthogonal to that variable to gain most of the information. So if you look at this formula, if I set alpha to the constant at the leading log level, So this formula is fully factorized into a piece that depends on T and a piece depends on Z. Okay? However, of course, this is not true in the subleading order. That's part of the reason we can have many, many possible choices of a definition of Z. Also related to the fact that there's ambiguities in how to deal with, how to enforce angular momentum, sorry. How to enforce energy momentum conservation in the parton shower. Okay. So that's why we choose to study a set of Z variables later in the, I'll show you later in this talk. So here is just a demonstration of the effect that I just told you. So first of all, I need a way to sort of follow the showering history. Okay. Of course, I don't have a microscope, I look at the splittings. So the claim is that if you take, so the approach we take is that we say, if we take any recursive jet algorithm, such as KT, okay? So essentially every, the variable we use in those algorithms is actually, you can think about it as approximately the same, very close to an evolution variable. Therefore, if you build up a jet, you take the, look at the clustering history, it's roughly the inverse history of the showering. Okay, so then this gives me a way to just look at the clustering history, then ask the question at the first and the second, maybe splitting, what is the Z variable is going to be. So if I do that, you see that, so this is the top. You see that, so this is the jet mass versus some Z variable. The top mass, of course, there's a band of jet mass around the M top, and it's peaked towards some finite value. Okay, so for the QCD jet, the jet mass is spread out, but there is a concentration towards in the C direction. There's a concentration towards C equal to zero. So that's just sort of indirect singularity. As I already mentioned, there are many possible choices at this level. What exactly I mean by Z-type variable? So it turns out that they are all at this level. They are all equivalent. They all reproduce the infrared structure of Alfieri Parisi equation if they reduce to our theoretical expression of a Z variable in the collinear and unshowered limit. Okay. So for example, there are a few choices. First of all, I can just take this. And also, I can take the D variable you use in the KT algorithm, and then define another so-called Z cut variable in this way. And you can also even define a Lorentz. So this variable is not a Lorentz invariant. You can also just make it into a Lorentz invariant variable just by introducing some artificial reference momentum, okay, arbitrary reference momentum. Okay. So these are just a few choices. So you can study those. This is still the jet mass plot. Okay. So you see again. So yes, the top jet has a hump here, but the QCD jet is also pretty spread out. And so these are the three Z variables I just told you. And you see they all peak towards some finite value, where the QCD is actually peaked towards zero. So different curves here corresponding to different shower algorithms. So we use the Pythias 6 virtuality and the PT order shower, and also we use the Pythias 8 showering algorithm. Okay, so you see this just shows you that the infrared singularity behavior is a robust feature. Okay, so again, efficiency versus rejection. So here, there are two type of resonances. So I can try to optimize according to different kind of Z variables. They all give you similar efficiency versus rejection curves. And this is the combination of the, if I optimize both on the jet mass cut and the Z variable cut. You see, I actually, if you compare to the previous plot, I actually get a factor of 2-3 enhancement in terms of rejection for the same efficiency. Okay. So of course, any of this our modeling of photon shower is imperfect. Okay, so any numbers I showed you cannot be precise. Okay, so therefore, in reality, we of course have to choose. So all we wanted to do here is to propose this kind of variables. In reality, what you have to do is to train those variables on real QCD jets produced at LHC. So for this, you need to ask whether I can have a nice sideband to use to study. Namely, I can go to a kinematical regime where I know the top signal won't distort the shape, and where still the but the background still have the similar shape. So for that, you can look at the QCD digest in different bins of environment mass. You see, they almost all have the same infrared singularity behavior. And so this is the bin that where the really the top signals reside mostly. So you can use the others as your sideband study. So this is just another C variable. You see the same behavior. So you can also consider the fact that there are three hot objects. So I have three hot objects. Really. So far, I've only considered two objects. Okay. So the top decays to BW also split. So it's certainly useful to consider those things. On the other hand, so I cannot present to you a clean theoretical argument about the QCD behavior in the 1-2-3 order. Okay. Of course, they are still going to be quite useful. We can show that use our own just within our Monte Carlo model. Approximation. So we can, for example, take three clusters from a splitting 1-2-3 splitting, and go to the and take the smallest take the combination with the smallest invariant mass. So the idea is that maybe the W resonance. But indeed, if you form the invariant mass of that combination, you see a W peak versus the QCD background. Okay, you can even define a C-ish variable. Within that W subcluster. And so you see still, the WZW is peaked more towards finite value than the QCD. And of course, the difference is smaller in this case. Okay, so we can also try to combine the rejection versus efficiency with both 2 and 3 body variables. You see there, again, some improvement in that regard. So now let me talk about my final class of variables, meaning that with the so-called stuck lepton in the leptonic decay. It means that there is still hard lepton in the, as part of the decay product of the top quark. So the main background in this case is that heavy flavor, their decay also gives you leptons. Okay. So on the other hand, the intuition here is, again, the B and the charm radiates most of its energy before it decays. So those leptons should be quite soft, okay, compared to the top one. Okay, the W jet, W plus jet background, for example, you can also, in that background, you can have accidentally the decay, the lepton decay from the W overlapped with the jet, okay? So it's less often. Also, there is some kinematical difference between this and the lepton and top jet. There's also other leptons in top jets. Actually, most of the lepton top jets you get actually from the decay of B and the subsequent maybe charm decay. Okay? So this is actually going to be similar to the kinematics of those leptons. Actually similar to the leptons in the heavy flavor decay. So in a sense, these leptons are somewhat less useful in terms of picking up. Okay, so again, so the analogy for the jet mass variable in this case is that I can define something called a visible mass, which is combining the lepton momentum with the PD, which is really just the rest of the hydronic activity, the P of the rest of the hydronic activity. You can show that for top quark, there is this nice edge, but it also extends down to very low range. This means that yes, this is useful, but it's probably good to have some additional handle. So you can define a lot of so-called separation variables. You can have a sort of a Z variable. You can have you can define a variable for the delta R between the lepton and the center of the jet, because the lepton all still have a transverse kick, of a fraction of the torque mass. And you can define some X mu variable, which I'm going to come back later. So you see these are the different backgrounds, different colors, and the blue are the two people, are the heavy booster top ones. Okay, so let me just focus on explaining to you one of them, which is the the understanding of this X mu variable. I remind you that the expression for X mu is that I take a momentum of mu and dot it into the Pb, which is really the momentum of the rest of the hydronic activity here, and divided by the environmental scope. Okay, so you can rewrite this as mb squared over q squared visible. So mb squared is really the mass of the rest of the hydronic activity. The reason to write this is that in top decay, because the phase space is controlled by m top, and mb squared tends to be only a very small fraction of the top mass. Okay, therefore this variable is actually peaking towards one. X mu is peaking towards one, but in heavy flavor decays, the mb squared carries most of the energy in this cluster, because the lepton in the end is very soft, only carries a very small fraction of the energy. Therefore, this variable is peaked towards zero, so as you can see. So this is the heavy flavor background, and this is the X mu variable for the boost top. So this is, again, this is the background where, this is X mu variable for the background where you have a W leptonic decay overlap with the jet. In this case, you see the X mu is even larger, okay? Because in this case, there's absolutely no correlation between the energy and then the separation between the lepton and the jet, okay? So they tend to be more separate, okay? Of course, there are also, this also means there are other kinematical differences between these two, okay? So this is the X mu variable for the case where the top decay, but the lepton is coming from the B. So you see that in this case, actually, because lepton only carries a very minuscule of energy, so the visible mass actually reconstructs top mass pretty well. But X mu behaves more like in the heavy flavor case. Okay, so here again is some efficiency versus rejection. So this is the efficiency versus rejection. If I only against the heavy flavor, if I optimize if for three different variables, for the Z variable, delta R, and X mu, you see the X mu has the best result. And this is the combine that variable with the visible mass variable. And this is the efficiency versus rejection against the W plus jet result. This is, again, the combination. Okay. So. So now let me just conclude by saying that I consider a top quark channel to be the most likely place for the new physics to show up. There are a lot of interesting channels with top quark plus addition objects with different kinematics, and a lot more study needs to be done for more efficient top finders. Thanks.
Okay, questions? Questions, comments?
So I guess you know Steve Ellis and I and a couple of students have been looking at some of the things over time, I'm a little confused about some of the, I mean, one of the, I guess the most important thing, which you know, is that the curves you get depend very strongly on exactly how you do the study and exactly what you put in.
Sure,
I know
sure.
you know that.
Sure.
So I just wanted to understand what choices did you actually make? So how did, when you showed us the TT bar, I assume that what you were doing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is you were
which TT bar?
I'm sorry. When you're running the studies that you showed towards the end of the talk. With the TD bar resonance.
Yeah, so that's...
You have some sort of mad graph produces the partons, then you run through Pythia.
That is actually a Pythia sequential Z prime.
Okay.
We just need something
sure.
that gives me energetic
I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
But you're actually taking the Pythia hadrons and then binning them?
Yes. A fast jet is the clustering.
But it's at the
Yeah, fast jet just takes.
But it's at the level of the hadrons, or it's at the level of the calorimeter bins.
It's at the level of the hadrons, but we do take into account the segmentation by roughly by saying that I'm going to sum all the energy within the 0.1.1 square.
So yeah. You've been it for.
Yeah, but it's a rough approximation of the.
Right.
Yeah.
The biggest worry that I have, I guess, about the substructure techniques, and
uh-huh.
it's not like I know the answer how to do it right. But
uh-huh.
The biggest concern that I think we have is that precisely in the region where you have differentiation between uh-huh. the parton shower and the TT bar is uh-huh. where we're not including the matrix element for harder emission. And
yeah, so
the concern is that unfortunately it may turn out, and certainly our indications have been that when you include that, you get worse.
I would agree with you more on the 1-2-3 variable, and the 1-2-2 I think the leading order is we are just really rely on this feature about the infrared singularity. So, there are still corrections to it.
But that doesn't change the fact that in the region where you're going to make a cut. So it's certainly true that the typical.
Mm-hmm.
That a significant fraction of mm-hmm. the QCG jets will be removed by your cut.
Mm-hmm.
The question is how much is left?
Sure.
And mm-hmm. the problem is that in the region where things are left is precisely where the matrix element contributes. Mm-hmm. And so we find a larger background. Mm-hmm. But
uh-huh.
it's preliminary.
The matrix element typically overestimates that. Sorry, the parton shower typically overestimates the.
It depends
details.
On what kind of matrix element you use, I think. What exactly.
I mean, I know in like thrust, right? That the large thrust, I mean, so where, I mean, no, this is. It's not a clear comparison, right? But I thought that the tails of the parton shower are not right. The parton shower tends to overestimate cross section rather than underestimate.
It depends on exactly what is what the level of.
I just know from experience that typically interference tends to push things down. Rather than up, but I think it really depends on what you actually look at.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm just talking about hard emission, which we know isn't included.
No, but a parton shower does have
some
hard emission. And all I'm saying is I think the matrix element tends to give you a lower amount of hard emission than the parton shower. Anyway.
You understand this better than I do. And what's the reason for that?
It's just the interference in the matrix elements is actually negative.
This is for E plus, sorry. We've got an isolated colored object. So why do we expect that?
Well, it depends on what shower you're talking about.
I agree. So maybe we should look at it.
Why don't we chat about this?
Yeah.
Any other questions? Well, great. Let's thank Lian Tao again.
Hey.
And we'll take a break and be back at 4:00.